And a very good morning to you. How are you doing? It's Sunday morning, October 20th, 2019. Hope you're well this Sunday. I'm Richie Allen. This is Sunday View. Going to look through the newspapers, the UK newspapers, the front pages, and some of the stories inside as well. Lot to talk about. Yesterday was a big day. Or was it? Or was it? We'll talk about that in a minute. Live right now on Fab Radio 2 here in Manchester, triggerwarning.tv, the TuneIn radio app, of course, and richieallen.co.uk. You can tweet the programme between now and midday UK time. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Love to hear your thoughts on the shenanigans and the chicanery yesterday at Parliament, at the House of Commons. Tell me, at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Welcome to the programme.
Asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv.
Yeah, it's that time again, so it is that time again.
Well, ring out the gimp.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yes, welcome, welcome, welcome. Lovely morning it is in Salford and Greater Manchester. The sun has got his hat on. It's lovely out there, I tells you. Lovely day, big day for the city of Salford and the city of Manchester. Little matter of United versus Liverpool later on. We're not going to talk about that. Hey, congratulations to my Welsh listeners. You just dumped the French out of the World Cup in Japan, so you did. Congratulations to the Welsh. The Irish were slaughtered by the All Blacks yesterday, so we were. But England beat Australia, yes, if you're interested in your rugby and all that sort of thing. But you might not be. Indeed. I'm going to just get straight into it. And I'll do that because there's a lot to get through. I've no idea how long this is going to take today. But anyway, we'll get right into it because Halloween is approaching. Halloween, October 31st, and it was believed by some that the United Kingdom would depart the European Union with a deal of some sorts after last week the European Union and the UK government agreed on a new withdrawal bill, withdrawal act, a withdrawal agreement. And that was supposed to be put to MPs yesterday in Westminster, but it wasn't, and we'll go through that in a minute. Before we do, though, let's very quickly run down through the front pages of the papers. The front pages. The Sunday Telegraph: Johnson refuses to sign Brexit letter delay. We'll come back to that, Brexit letters. The Sunday Times: Boris fights Brexit wreckers with three defiant letters to the European Union. Hilariously, also on the Times front page, Harry and Meghan need a break. Or we need a feckin' break from Harry and Meghan, one or the other. But Harry and Meghan need a break. That's a little deviation from Brexit on the front page of the Sunday Times. The Observer goes with no delays, vows Johnson, after humiliating Commons defeat. The Sunday Mirror leads with humiliated. And the Mail on Sunday, fond of melodrama, The Mail, never one to be accused of not loving a bit of melodrama. The Mail on Sunday goes with House of Fools. House of Fools, says the Mail on Sunday. And the Sunday Express, speaking of melodrama, has the whinging headline, Why Won't They Let Us Leave? Right. Why won't they? The Star on Sunday, no clean sweep today. No clean sweep today. Because the Star on Sunday goes with, wait for it, EastEnders star works in B&M shop. Not S&M shop. That might have been interesting. B&M shop. And this is about Katie Jarvis. Do you watch EastEnders? Do you? Do you? You don't? She played a character called Hayley Slater in the show. She's now working as a security guard in a discount shop. Typical of the tabloids, that, you know. Kicking somebody when they're down. She might not be down. She might have got totally cheesed off with acting. Right? If watching EastEnders is suicide-inducing, it's so depressing. Maybe working for it or working in it maybe is the same. Maybe she wants to be a security guard. Anyway, let's move on. High drama yesterday. The BBC reports this morning. Does the BBC. And I'll read you the BBC BBC story on the BBC website, bbc.co.uk/news. I'll read you the story. Boris Johnson has sent a request to the European Union for a delay to Brexit, but without his signature. The request was accompanied by a second letter signed by Mr. Johnson saying that he believes a delay would be a mistake. Johnson was required by law to ask the European Union for an extension to the October 31st deadline after losing a Commons vote. The EU Council President, Donald Tusk, tweeted last night that he had received the extension request and would consult European Union leaders on how to react. Opposition MPs have warned Johnson that if he tries to circumvent Parliament's instructions to seek a delay, then he may find himself in the law courts. Johnson, of course, had previously said he would rather be dead in a ditch than ask the European Union to delay Brexit, and that the UK would leave on 31st of October, do or die. Hours after losing a crunch vote in a historic Saturday session in the House of Commons, Johnson ordered a senior diplomat to send an unsigned photocopy of the request for a delay, which was forced on him by MPs last month. So what happened then? Is this confusing for you? Not to ask or not... I'm not asking. Are you thick? Of course I'm not. Is this... Do you understand what's happening here? I think maybe it's meant to be a little bit confusing for people. Let's have a quick recap. We were supposed to have a vote on Johnson's withdrawal deal with the European Union yesterday. What the bloody hell? Why didn't we? Well, here's how it works then. Here's the basic kind of summary of how bills and law and legislation works in UK governance. This is how it works. A bill gets proposed by an MP or by a group of MPs. Before that bill is voted on, it is debated. Sometimes for a couple of hours, sometimes for days. Lots of debates. Then, just before the members of Parliament get to vote on the original proposed new law or new legislation, other MPs get a chance to table amendments to that new bill or new proposed legislation, right? Do you get it? And the Speaker of the House, in this case John Bercow, he gets to select which of those amendments are then voted on. So you might get two or three votes before the main vote. You get that? All right. So before Johnson's newly negotiated deal then was ready to go, before MPs, right, yesterday, there was a couple of amendments, and one of them was tabled by Sir Oliver Letwin. Yes. And his amendment proposed that Commons would withhold approval of Johnson's new agreement with the European Union until the necessary UK legislation to leave the European Union has been passed. They said it was an insurance policy and it was drawn up to prevent the UK leaving with no deal in the event that the government failed to pass the new laws needed. Do you get that? So basically, it passed, meaning that we got no vote on Boris Johnson's deal. It all amounted to nothing. The first sitting of Parliament on a Saturday since the Falklands War, it began with Boris Johnson thanking all the little people who work in the House of Commons for giving up their Saturday. It was all building up. The television news programmes were making a massive drama of it, and it all was deflated like a balloon. You know, when you try and blow a balloon up and you can't, you don't have enough breath in your lungs, and it just deflates. Because we got nothing. We got no vote on Boris Johnson's deal. Now, because Oliver Letwin's amendment passed. Right? You get that. So Oliver Letwin's amendment passed, and that also immediately triggered the Benn Act. Right? You're properly confused now, right? Don't be. Because a few weeks ago, the Benn Act was passed by Parliament and given royal assent after it passed the House of Lords. What was the Benn Act? Well, the Benn Act compelled Boris Johnson to ask the European Union for an extension if he couldn't get his deal passed by October 19th after the EU summit. So by Letwin's amendment passing the House yesterday, it triggered the Benn Act, meaning that Johnson was compelled last night to ask the European Union for an extension, all because of the chicanery of Oliver Letwin. So Johnson had to write to the European Union, so he did write to the European Union. But he wrote three letters, not one, not two, but three, to be known hereafter as the Holy Brexit Letters of Antioch. Right? Okay, three letters he wrote. And we're going to hear about them now briefly. Because speaking on the Andrew Marr show this morning were none other than The Telegraph's Peter Foster and Sarah Vine, who writes for the Daily Mail. She's also the wife of Michael Gove. So you'll hear Peter Foster and Sarah Vine explaining these letters and what happened overnight. Listen up.
Well, not that confused. Three defiant letters, so Downing Street gets its front page headlines. The truth is, three lines of response from Donald Tusk. We got the request, legally, properly constituted, and we will look at it. And that's always been the EU's position. You might not know it from reading these newspapers and lots of things saying Downing Street, saying, oh, Macron, Merkel might not give us a deal, watch out. You know, they will give us an extension. Both sides are committed to this deal. The question is how long the extension would be and whether it's necessary. The EU will wait and watch. If there is a meaningful vote or the withdrawal agreement goes over the line and they only need a very short extension to complete the paperwork, as it were, that's what they'll do. If it all goes to pieces this week and you need a longer extension, I think that's what they'll do too. Angela Merkel, very clear in the European Council in private, there would need to be extensions. And Macron complaining, but also agreeing at bottom line, they would do the extension.
So this means, Sarah Vine, that actually Boris Johnson has some space next week. And he may even have the numbers to get meaningful vote five, I think it is now, and the legislation through, or the first bit of the legislation through the House of Commons
next week. Yeah, I think the feeling is there are the will and the numbers are there. It's just obviously there will just be the sort of various obstacles along the way. I mean, Letwin, we don't know what he's going to do next week.
We'll find out.
We'll
shortly.
Find out, hopefully. But, and you know, I think these are all... I think there's a degree of sort of acceptance in the Number 10 camp that this is now a process that has to play itself out, and they are just going to stick to their guns, which is what what Boris has done. And actually, part of the reason why he's getting somewhere now is that he's just had he's not deviated, and it's very difficult when you've got all of this noise and all of this sort of shouting and screaming and people jumping up and down to stay focused. But that's what they're trying to do.
Yeah, Sarah Vine there, who's married to Michael Gove, who's a Boris Johnson ally, of course, and he's the Chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster. And you heard Peter Foster there. Peter Foster believes the European Union will grant a delay. Vine says, well, he might get his vote passed through the House of Commons next week, but remember the amendments. Remember the amendments of October. Because we'll come back to amendments shortly. If he puts it before the House of Commons next week, Johnson, there will be some amendments attached to it, and we'll talk about them shortly. So what about Oliver Letwin then? Pesky Ollie, the man whose amendment yesterday prevented the vote that we'd all been waiting for. He was on the Andrew Marr show too this morning, and Andrew Marr asked him, why the amendment, Ollie, don't you trust your PM, Oliver Letwin?
I certainly trust that he intends to get this deal, which is the crucial question, and I'm going to support him in doing so by voting for the second reading and right the way through the bill, because I think his deal is the deal that will get us out in an orderly fashion. And I've always believed that that's the one thing that really matters. I said about 18 months in the House of Commons, I vote for any deal.
Why did you skewer him yesterday then?
Because yesterday wasn't about the deal, despite all the hype. Yesterday was about the question whether the Benn Act will still be effective and whether we'll get an extension if, for any reason, we haven't got the deal completed by the 31st of October. And that, I felt, and have continued to feel, is very important. We need the safeguard, the insurance policy, that if we don't get this passed by the 31st of October, we don't just crash out of the EU. That was what yesterday was about. Next week is about the deal and the bill. I'll vote for the deal, I'll vote for the bill.
Isn't the truth that you never really thought he was trying for a deal or would get a deal? And if he did, you never really thought he would get through the House of Commons. And when you realised you were wrong about those things, you decided it was time to scupper it.
No, other way around. I thought in August that he wasn't being serious about getting a deal. That was one of the reasons why we put the Benn Act in place. Part of it was just to make sure that if we got to the 31st of October, we hadn't got a deal, we would be safe and not crash out. But part of it was to give him an incentive to get a deal. That, I think, worked. I think he's now got his deal. And now for those of us for whom that was the motivation, we need to back that deal. And as I say, I've been willing to back Theresa May's deal three times. I've certainly backed this deal.
But we're all very angry, says Andrew Marr. We're all very angry.
If we ask the question, why are Brexiteers so angry with you at the moment, and so many of them believe that you're really against the whole project, you don't want us to leave the EU, you only have to look at the list of people who backed your amendment yesterday. Every single anti-Brexit MP backed your amendment. It was a kind of coalition of the anti-Brexit forces in Parliament, which leads many people to think behind the reasonable and urbane exterior, Oliver Letwin is against Brexit and this is part of a plot to stop Brexit happening.
Yes, I know. It's very sad that people do get to thinking that if you are in alliance with people who have a different agenda, and I was in alliance with people who had different agendas. Yes, of course, most of the people voting for these things have been all the way along people who didn't want Brexit or passionate about a referendum or whatever it may be. That's not my view. My view is we need an orderly exit. And if you're going to achieve that, and if the government isn't willing to do it on its own, then you have to ally yourself with some strange people, so to speak, people who have differing views. But
dangerous
the fact
to
is,
smile at them too broadly in front of cameras.
I know. I shouldn't ever smile. But the fact is, I'm a human being, and if somebody is making a joke, I laugh. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
The truth is that there's something really important at stake here, which is the question, is our country going to try to achieve some compromise solution that gets an orderly exit where, yes, OK, the people I was working with yesterday are going to be dissatisfied because it's not remaining and it's not a referendum, and the people who are on the extreme end of the Brexit spectrum are going to be dissatisfied because it's not a clean break, as they call it, and a disorderly exit. But the fact is, 80% of the people in this country or something, I think, can live with this deal, want to compromise. Yeah. I've been seeking a compromise all the way through for 18 months. Okay. That's why I voted for Theresa's deal. Right. That's why I vote for this deal.
Spoils poor Dolly. Of course he's a Remainer. He was grinning like a Cheshire cat he was yesterday. There wasn't any joke there. He was grinning. Big cheesy grin on him, so he had. Right, so Labour's John McDonnell was on Sophie Ridge on Sky News. He's the Shadow Chancellor of the Exchequer. Again, for listeners overseas, every government secretary of state, every government minister has a shadow in the main opposition party. Okay? So the Chancellor of the Exchequer in the UK is a guy called Sajid Javid, right? Is that right? They change around so often. Tis him, yeah. And, yes, that's the one, Sajid Javid, yes. His shadow is John McDonnell. Now, he should be happy, John McDonnell, because Boris Johnson has indeed sent letters to the European Union seeking an extension. He was on Sophie Ridge. You happy, John? Are you happy?
Not really, because he's also sent another letter, hasn't he, which seems to be... Well, actually, I think he may well be in contempt of Parliament or the courts themselves, because he's clearly trying to undermine the first letter and not signing the letter... He's behaving a bit like a sport brat. Parliament made a decision. He should abide by it. And this idea that you send another letter contradicting the first, I think it flies in the face of what both Parliament and the courts have decided.
But isn't all that stuff just theatre? You know, whether or not he signed it, whether or not he sent other things.
Yes.
I mean, he has sent...
The irony of Sophie Ridge, a Sky News presenter, asking John McDonnell, isn't it theatre, when she's in the middle of a lavish multi-million pound... daily production of nothing but theatre. Little bit of irony.
He has sent the letter, hasn't he? And the EU seem to have accepted it.
You know, to a certain extent, it is theatre, but at the same time, it does drive at the heart of our democracy, where a prime minister has to abide by the law. And if you're, as a prime minister, trying to undermine a decision made by Parliament, that flies in the face of actually that concept of abiding by the law. So, yes, it is a bit of theatre, but at the same time, there is something fundamental here as well.
So you think it could go as far as going to the courts?
It may well be. Others will decide that matter. But a number of lawyers have already commented that this is seeking to undermine a decision of Parliament and therefore flies, as I say, flies in the face of both Parliament and court decisions.
Yes, all the drama. It's got to come to some conclusion next week, dear listener. I know you're tired of it. I know, yeah, it's very important, though. I get emails from people who say that, you know, long-time listeners to the programme, and they say, I like the programme, Richie, generally, but the Brexit stuff has become monotonous. It is monotonous. We'll stay with it for another 10 or so minutes here, but it's hugely important. You know, it's a dot-connecting exercise. You have to understand what federalist superstates are where the ideas for super states came from and where they're ultimately meant to lead, it's very important that people understand this. You know, the European Union isn't the result of a bunch of benevolent politicians around the continent in back in the day saying, let's join up all our countries together so that we can trade with one another, mutual prosperity and peace. That is the fiction. That's what you're meant to believe. You know, free movement, we can move within one another's countries, we can study in each other's countries, and it'll all be tickety-boo, and we'll never have a war on the continent again. Again, that's the fiction. The reality is something that is beyond the scope of most people's imagination, sadly. And it's not even that difficult to see it. The reality is a federalist superstate, a massive nation state, like the United States of America, made up of countries. And in those countries, no longer will the citizens of those countries have any say whatsoever in what happens to them and in their own futures. Not that you've got much anyway as it stands, right? So that it becomes much, much easier for global financiers and banksters to control everything, because it's much, much easier to control global events if you are in control of two or three dozen men and women in Brussels. Much easier to control things if you control a few bureaucrats in Brussels or a few unelected commissioners in Brussels than if you had to persuade the individual governments of 28 nation states. That's what it was all about, the European Union. It was all about the massive petrochemical, pharmaceutical and banking elites failing to secure Europe, right, as they attempted to do by backing the Nazi party and by backing Hitler. And their idea, of course, was after Hitler had succeeded in conquering Europe, well, they would basically then take over. And this is not fiction, this is fact, historic fact. And in their failure to do that, they dreamt up the idea of the European Union. Much easier to control a tiny group of people and get your way than it is to control 28 countries. And that might sound very simplistic, but it's true. And how that has happened and how it continues to evolve is massively important. But I understand when you say you're pissed off of it. It is vexing as a radio producer to constantly be talking about it. And I'm doing quite well. I spend a lot of programmes not talking about it lately, because we see it unravelling now. We see in front of our eyes that it's just not going to happen. Doesn't matter that 17.4 million people voted to leave the European Union. And in October 2019, we're still in it. And not going to leave it, no matter whether Boris Johnson's deal gets passed or not. It's crazy. Brexit Party leader Nigel Farage was on the same show, Sophie Ridge, on Sunday. What does Nigel Farage think? Is Boris Johnson a spoiled brat?
I think given the behaviour of Remainers in Parliament, including the Speaker, I think Boris Johnson has a right to be pretty angry. And the country is pretty angry. I mean, just look at yesterday. It was built up to be Super Saturday, and it turned into an absolute flop. And what we've really seen now is over 3 years of the establishment trying to stop Brexit, and that's why the public are so upset with their politicians, and beyond Brexit are going to want real political reform.
So where I'm a little bit confused is you're talking about that people will be upset at the idea that it's, you know, the can's been kicked, that the delay is happening. Yeah. But earlier this week you said, would I rather accept a new European treaty that's frankly very bad for us, or would I prefer to have an extension and a general election? I would always go for the latter option. So are you really saying you prefer to extend Article 50, delay Brexit? I mean, you were like a secret sleeper agent. What's going on?
No. I want to leave on the 31st of October with a clean break Brexit. That's the only Brexit worth having, because the one that Boris Johnson is putting to the House of Commons, or tried to put yesterday and bounced them into before anybody had actually seen the content, it's a new EU treaty.
It's a treaty. It's not a deal. Listen to what Farage says. Don't paint me as some sort of Farage supporter. Stop doing this, you snowflakey type people, you. Because I use an audio example of Farage explaining it doesn't mean that I support the Brexit Party or UKIP or any of that. I have no time for any of them. What he says here is true. It is not a deal that is that will see the UK leave the European Union. The withdrawal agreement that Johnson has negotiated with Europe is a new treaty which will not see the UK ever leave the European Union. You've got to understand this. And Farage explains it well here, as well as anybody can.
EU treaty. It binds us, and it doesn't get Brexit done, because all it does is take us on to the next stage of negotiations, and Michel Barnier has outlined all of his red lines. It's all there in the political declaration, and we're going to be headed into another 3 years of agony. So
he's absolutely right. It is all there in the declaration. I've read it this weekend. I have read it. It will not mean that the UK takes control of its own waters again. It will not. The European Union nation states will be fishing UK waters. It does not mean that the UK takes back control of its borders. It does not. Farage is right. It's a treaty. When Johnson says, and Michael Gove says today, this is a good deal for us because we take back control, they are out Pinocchioing Pinocchio. They are lying through their teeth, and they know they are. This stuff has yet to be negotiated. This is bullshit on an epic scale. It's a mountain of bullshit that blocks out the sun. All of this stuff has to be negotiated in the next 3 years. First of all, there's an ever-increasing, what they call, implementation period. So we don't leave anyway till the end of 2022. It was supposed to be the end of 2020. That's the end of 2022. And in the meantime, they negotiate this stuff. No taking back control of fishing waters. No taking back control of borders and ending freedom of movement. None of that. They are lying. Whatever Farage might be, free market capitalist, Thatcher, maybe on steroids, maybe Farage, maybe. Like I said, I'm no supporter of his. He's telling the truth. This is what it is. This is what they've negotiated. It's a divorce agreement with the sum of £33 billion attached to it and a loose agreement to negotiate stuff over the next couple of years. No control has been taken back. It's worse than staying in the European Union. And you can take that to the bank. That's a fact. Let's hear what else he says.
Oh, I want to leave on the 31st of October, but, you know, I'll warn everybody. If this treaty goes through, nothing will have changed at all.
Nothing.
And I think far better to have a short delay and a general election where we might solve this, because we've got a Leave country. That hasn't changed one little bit. And a Remain Parliament and a general election could just sort this out.
General election. Do you know, elections are going to become like referenda. Elections will become like referenda. Nobody will ever accept the results of elections in the future. Why should you? Because if you've got an increasingly narcissistic, egocentric, identitarian society where feelings subvert facts or suppress facts or trump facts, nobody will ever accept losing ever again. Nope, didn't lose. Nope, Labour didn't lose. People didn't know what they were voting for. Nope, we didn't lose. That's the way it's going to be. And Farage doubles down here on explaining this new withdrawal agreement is a treaty and not a deal, and why it is wretched, because Ridge says to him, the presenter, come on, Nigel, this is a form of Brexit. Why don't we just vote for it and just be done with it once and for all? And he says, no, I'll tell you again what it is.
On the 1st of November, if we were to leave, we wake up and we're still in the single market and we're still inside the customs union and we're still paying money to the EU. And we're still...
Only because of the transition.
Right. And the transition, OK, lasts up until the end of 2022. It's a very, very long way away. Any thought...
The end of 2020, isn't it, Mr.
Well,
Farage?
And we have to give notice of extension by the 1st of July. The chances of us sorting this out in the next 6 months are just about zero. And as I say, even when you hear the Prime Minister saying we take back our fisheries, read the small print. You know, have a look at what is being demanded by Monsieur Barnier in terms of the level playing field. Basically, he's saying that in terms of employment legislation, social protection, environmental law, and even taxation, we are going to have to be on a level playing field with the rest of Europe, which means we're not taking back control of our laws. This is not Brexit, and all the dilemmas that we faced in the last few months, we'll be back with them in May and June next year. A clean break is the only way we're going to get a proper Brexit.
We're nearly done with Brexit now. Back to the Andrew Marr show. Keir Starmer is the shadow Brexit secretary. Remember, for every government secretary of state, there's a shadow. He's the shadow Brexit secretary, and he's on with Andrew Marr, who asks him, what will Labour do next week? Now, keep this in mind. Amendments. Remember we talked about amendments earlier on? Johnson is going to put his agreement with the European Union to MPs next week. But before that, opposition MPs and even government MPs will get the chance to table amendments. So Andrew Marr says to Keir Starmer, what's Labour going to do next week?
Well, the first thing we're going to do is make sure that we get the extension that is required under the Benn Act. We've had this silly approach by the Prime Minister on that. So that's the first thing.
Can I just stop you on that and ask you about this? Because we've had three letters sent, we've had various telephone calls made. Are you satisfied that he has answered the spirit of the law as well as the letter of the law? And is there any chance of you ending up in court tomorrow on all of this?
He's being childlike. The law is very clear. He should have signed one letter in accordance with the law. He's being childlike. And if... I don't think it'll happen, but if we crash out because of what he's done with the letters in 11 days' time without a deal, he bears personal responsibility for that. So that's
You're not saying he's going to have to go to court about this, and you're not going to take him to court.
I'm sure there'll be court proceedings, but the first thing we're going to do in Parliament is deal with that issue. The second thing, then, is if he brings in a bill to implement his deal, we will fight amendments on that, because his deal is a very, very bad deal, and it has within it a trapdoor to no deal at the end of next year.
So the amendments then, this is really important now, the amendments. Listen up, people. Now, you at the back over there, stop looking out the window. This is important. If Johnson holds a vote on his deal next week, which Letwin prevented him from doing yesterday, Labour will table amendments to it. Remember I explained amendments earlier on? Before a bill goes before the House, MPs can propose amendments to it and the Speaker will select a few, or one, or two, or three, or whatever. So what will Labour's amendments to Johnson's vote be next week? When Johnson says, here's my withdrawal agreement, I want you to vote on it, what amendments will Labour table? Important.
It is essential that we expose this deal for what it is, because it's a deal that fundamentally changes our economy and our approach. So we need to do that. There but are technical...
Exposing a deal is one thing. That's a political are you going to try and change the deal, is my question.
We will put down amendments to make sure that the future destination is a close economic relationship with the EU. But there's more than that, Andrew, because
I keep stopping you on this because the detail is really, really important. So the amendments will say, in effect, that we stay inside the customs union or alongside the customs union, inside or alongside the single market? What kind of...
We've been arguing for a very long time now for a customs union with the EU and for single market alignment. There are other amendments that are really important, because there's a trapdoor to no deal at the end of 2020 that we need to deal with and close, and we can do that in the legislation. And, of course, we need an amendment to say that whatever deal gets through, it should be subject to a referendum where that deal is put to the public and they're asked, do you want to leave on these terms or would you rather remain in the EU? So next week's going to be busy.
There'll be an amendment.
Do you want to leave on these terms or remain in the European Union? No third option, to leave with no deal whatsoever. Aren't they very democratic, the Labour Party?
Is he?
There'll be an amendment next week to any legislation calling for a second referendum or a so-called people's vote.
Andrew, it's inevitable. It's been down many times when we've got to this stage of the exercise. When that bill goes down, it is inevitable that that amendment will be put down, because a growing number of people now think the only way truly to settle this is to ask people, do you want to leave on these terms or would you rather remain?
Or would you rather remain? Yeah, we're not going anywhere. Andrew Marr senses the gravity of the moment here.
This is a very important moment. Will the Labour front bench actually be putting down an amendment for a referendum and then vote for it?
I think it's more likely that it'll come from the back bench because almost every victory we've had...
Will Labour back it then?
Yes. Almost every victory we've had on anything in the last 3 years has come from the back benches. That's how we got the meaningful vote. That's how we got any progress in this.
Right. So Labour will be whipped to back a second referendum vote next week.
Andrew, we've already voted, I think, three times as a party for a second referendum with a three-line whip behind it. And that is the clear policy. Whether it's this deal or any future deal...
So you get the picture. Before Johnson gets to put his withdrawal bill before Parliament on Tuesday, maybe, or Wednesday, Labour will table an amendment to it that says, OK, but there will be a referendum on that deal. And the two choices will be... People can accept that deal or they can choose to remain in the European Union. An absolutely bloody final note on Brexit today, and it's important, that's why I've dedicated most of this show to it, because it's important. Whether you're bored of it or not, it's very important. Let's go back to where we began. Let's go back to the beginning with David Davis, the first Brexit secretary. Fairly decent bloke, ex-army bloke. He was on Sophie Ridge on Sunday as well. And dropped a couple of truth bombs on the show and on the audience. After he comments on the letters written by Boris Johnson last night, he has some wisdom. So he talks briefly about the letters and then he brings a bit of clarity, a bit of reality, and almost wistfully kind of speculates what might have been after we chose to leave on the 23rd of June 2016. David Davis, the first Brexit secretary, resigned in the summer of 2018, on with Sophie Ridge today.
Yeah, I think he had no choice. That was the law. But the irony, of course, is that the Parliament can instruct you to do something, but they can't instruct you to change your mind. And that's what he's made patently clear. He hasn't changed his mind. He doesn't want an extension. He has to send the letter, but that's it.
And this is important now. He talks about what might have been.
Do you think that there is a chance now that we might not leave the EU at the end of October?
There's a chance, but I don't think there's a probability.
Why not? What do you think will...
Well, because he's got this deal, and you have to understand that the risk of no deal from the European point of view is, if anything, much worse than the risk for us.
You did hear that, didn't you? I know you've heard me say it a million times, but it's very important at this juncture to keep this in mind. And to ask yourself, why? Why didn't it happen?
The risk of no deal, from the European point of view, is, if anything, much worse than the risk for us. I mean, there's a downside for us. A turbulence will come out if we have no deal. But the risk for Ireland is terrible. The risk for the Netherlands and Belgium, the cross-channel traffic, is terrible. The risk for Germany is 100,000 jobs. So they want a deal to happen. So they want this deal to get through.
Much more important to them that there was some agreement than it was to the UK. So ask yourself why, and I'm not going to answer the question because I've answered it a million times on this programme. Why didn't the UK negotiating team, from the outset, say, we're going to leave with no deal? Unless you agree that we'll have a trading relationship pretty similar to the one we have now. This is the UK speaking to the EU. You accept that we'll have the trading relationship we have now in terms of no tariffs or very low tariffs, and we'll go off and do our own thing, make our own trade agreements, we'll take control of our waters, and we'll take control of our borders. And that's the way it's going to be. That's the way we should have negotiated from the word go. Shouldn't have been any negotiation. And they would have kicked and screamed, and we would have said, well, you can kick and scream all you want. If you attempt to impose punitive tariffs on British goods entering the continent, we'll screw you to the wall here in the UK. And that would have been the end of the matter. But David Davis couldn't do that. Because as he's pointed out 1,000 times on British radio, to thick, cloth-eared radio hosts who don't want to listen or who don't want to expand on what he says, Theresa May filled the civil service with Remainers and gave Ollie Robbins the job of overseeing what David Davis was doing. Put him above David Davis. An unelected guy, Ollie Robbins, all Europhiles to the bone, to thwart and mess around at every juncture what David Davis and his team are trying to do. Farage said it. It's a Leave country led by a Remain Parliament. And the civil service is even worse. It is the European Union to the core, to the bone, to the marrow. That's what happened. We should have said, listen, fuck, excuse my language, I've gone this far without swearing, right? Fuck your Article 50 and 2 years of negotiating. Fuck it. There's no need for it. We're gone. It's like leaving a gym. I didn't negotiate my way out. I've never been a member of a gym, I must be honest. But if I was, I wouldn't be negotiating my way out of it. I'm leaving the gym. Well, let's have a implementation period. Fuck off. I'm leaving the gym. In our case, it should have been, we're leaving. We're not putting a wall up around the United Kingdom. We want people to come here and visit. But what we don't want anymore is people coming from Eastern European countries, low-wage economies, competing for semi-skilled manual labour jobs with our own people. It's not xenophobia, it's not racism, it's not little Englanderism. Little Englandism. It's not that. It's that we've not got so many manufacturing jobs anymore and our own folks need them. So we're going to stop low-wage migrant workers coming in. We've got to stop that because at the moment we can't feed our own people. That's how it should have been. So we'll stop that. We now control our own fishing waters even, and we'll make our own laws. And you're going to like it, because if you don't like it, we'll screw you. And then you'll have the biggest corporations in Europe, car manufacturers, food manufacturers, textiles, clothes, food, wine, coming to kill you. They'll kill you, is what they'll do. They'll murder you. So you'll give us a decent trading agreement and you'll piss off and we'll be out of the European Union. It's how it should have gone. But it didn't go like that. It didn't. And why didn't it? Well, because, again, most people's imagination doesn't have the breadth or the scope to understand what the European Union is. It is a fascistic, Orwellian imagined super state where the people of the continent are slaves, where countries are loaned money to get them into ever increasing lunatic debt mountains. And then the debts or the liens are called in and the countries can't pay them. And the European Central Bank and the International Monetary Fund and the European Union, which makes up the Troika, it then says to those nation states, brilliant, we now own you. And in Ireland's case, the Merry Indian and his pals in the Irish government, they can't even open their mouths and speak without the approval of the European Union. And they can't even draft a budget for the next fiscal year to determine what the Irish government will spend money on. They can't do anything unless a couple of men land in Dublin Airport or in Shannon from Germany and come to tell them whether or not their budget has been approved by the European Union. This is what the fucking snowflakes, the identitarians, the egocentric narcissists who marched in London yesterday, for the people for whom facts don't matter, just feelings. This is what they don't know and don't want to know about the European Union. Jesus Christ, you had Guy Verhofstadt tweeting out on Saturday that as Donald Trump is making such a mess of Syria, this proves that we need our fucking European army, says Guy Verhofstadt. Yes, this is where it's all meant to go. A prison planet with three or four of these unions. NAFTA. African. South America. And then those who really pull the strings, it's very easy then to control the world. That is your segue to a one world government, which people like my guests have been talking about now for 40, 50 years, many of them. This is where it's all going. And that's why we spend so much time talking about Brexit and how it is being wrecked, and how 17.4 million people are being gaslit by a media who tells them that they were fucking thick, that they didn't understand what they were voting for, or that they were racist. That's how it goes. I'll be back with you in a couple of minutes' time, so I will. Don't go anywhere.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Lovely. Here's a bit of Stevie Wonder this gorgeous Sunday morning in Salford and Greater Manchester. Back in a couple of minutes with more. And I look through some of your tweets as well. I've been neglecting the tweets. I apologise for that. It's coming up for 14 minutes to the top of the hour. Yeah, you gotta love a bit of Stevie on a Sunday. I don't know what it is about Sunday. Stevie Wonder, obviously musical genius. Sounds better on Sunday, doesn't he? Or is that just nonsense? Right, good morning to Liz, to Gail. By the way, do me a favour, folks. This might sound a bit cranky. It isn't cranky. Can you keep me out of your fucking stupid conversations on Twitter, please? I'm tired of getting notifications on Twitter for stupid conversations that have nothing to do with me or the radio show. It's very simple. Just delete the at Richie Allen show bit and I won't get your fucking asinine conversations. Maybe I am a bit cranky. I'm not. I don't use Twitter very much, you see. So when I come onto it, there's hundreds of notifications. And I find myself included in conversations that I couldn't give a shit about. Or that have nothing to do with me or geopolitics or the show. So give over. Or I'll come round yours and smack the piss out of you. I promise you. What are we looking at? 11 minutes. So anyway, good morning to you people. Good morning to Charlie as well. And good morning to Jason, who recently discovered the programme. Thanks, Jason. Cheers, mate. I mentioned William, did I? Hi to Susan Tumawinga as well, my only black friend. My only black friend, whom I've never met. Hi to Sean as well. We're going nowhere, says Sean. Of course we're not, Sean. We're not going anywhere. Never meant to. It was never going to come to pass. To anybody else who's tweeting, to Anonymous in Western Massachusetts, and I understand now Matt in Boston in Massachusetts, he works nights. Hence, he's up at the crack of dawn when we do the newspaper reviews during the week. Yeah, yeah. Of course, what I could be doing now by being cranky is I could be bringing upon myself a whole pile of conversations that I have no interest in. But anyway, there you are. Okay, I'll just mute you. I'll just mute you. And that's not good. It's not good for me. It's not good for me because I won't have any comments to read out. But if I keep getting tagged into conversations about silly things, I will mute you. Then I won't be notified. Do you understand? Okay, good stuff. Let's move on briefly because we're going to run out of time. There was an FA Cup match yesterday. Now, the FA Cup is a knockout competition. It's the oldest knockout soccer competition in the world. And it's an amazing one because everybody gets to play in it. And the final is held in Wembley Stadium in London every May. It's a great thing. But a match was abandoned yesterday after Haringey Borough's manager, that's the name of the team, Haringey Borough, their manager took the team off the field after an accusation of racism had been levelled. And there was a bottle thrown and some spitting. The home goalkeeper, a man called Valerie Douglas, how do I pronounce this? Pagetat, so it's P-A-J-E-T-A-T, so it's Pagetat. Valerie Douglas Pagetat. He's on goal, right? So he's in between the sticks on goal. And he was reportedly spat at and he was hit by an object thrown from the Yeovil Town end. So it's Haringey Borough against Yeovil Town. Apparently a defender called Kobe Rowe was racially abused, and that's according to the team manager, Tom Loiseau. Tom Loiseau is the Haringey boss. He said, "I took the players off. There was no way I could let him continue." So the black defender was racially abused allegedly, and his manager took the team off the pitch, saying there was no way I could let him continue. "If we get thrown out of the competition, I don't care," he told the BBC. The match was played at Haringey's home ground, Coles Park Stadium. It was in the fourth qualifying round of the FA Cup, and the winner would go on to the first round proper. But the manager took the players off because of an allegation of racist abuse. A lot of that in the news this week after the England-Bulgaria game. Speaking about this on Sky News this morning were two people, the defence editor of the Sun newspaper, David Willetts, and an anthropologist called Mary Ann Okota. And you will hear Mary Ann Okota first. Very interesting. Can we hear it? Should be able to hear it. Have we had a faux pas there? Here we are.
This is an FA Cup tie that was played between Haringey and Yeovil. And the goalkeeper was subject to, Haringey's goalkeeper was subject to racist abuse. People were spitting and threw things at him. And then another player on the same team was subject to racist chants. And so the manager said, "That's it, we're walking off."
Yeah.
And to their credit, Yeovil's team said, "Well, we're walking off too because we don't condone what's happening. It's our supporters, but we don't condone this." And so the game was abandoned. And the young player who was subject to some of the abuse, a guy called Kobe Rowe, tweeted or wrote on Instagram saying, you know, this is another game of football ruined by racists. I think the thing for me is that this obviously impacts sport and football specifically, but I wonder whether it's a sort of litmus test for the society more generally.
Well, it is a societal thing because
this is Gillian Joseph now. She co-presents The Breakfast Show at weekends. Gillian is a black lady.
Because these people aren't there in isolation. You know,
no.
It doesn't just happen on the football pitch. This is how they live their lives. We're just
listen to what Gillian says again. This is really interesting. It's important you hear this, actually. Very important.
Well, it is a societal thing because these people aren't there in isolation. You know,
no.
It doesn't just happen on the football pitch. This is how they live their lives. It's just magnified.
Yeah. Well, hang on a second now. So if the black players were racially abused yesterday, I don't know how that manifested, by the way, because nobody seems to know how it manifested, apart from somebody throwing a bottle and allegedly somebody else spat. Are they suggesting, Gillian Joseph and the anthropologist Mary Ann Okota, that people are going around in our cities and in our towns and are making monkey noises at black people in the streets and are spitting at them or shouting racist abuse at them? Because that is most definitely not happening in our streets, in our towns and in our villages. It's manifestly not happening. It just isn't. I'm tired of saying this. So a couple of idiots might have said something to a goalkeeper and might have said something to a defender in a match yesterday afternoon. And we're supposed to believe that it's a litmus test and that it's a wider problem in society. But it isn't a wider problem in society. I've said it before and I've said it again. Ethnic minorities have never had it so good. We are forbidden, are we not, from even speaking. And by we, I mean white people. Look, I'm not going to go into a kind of a conservative right kind of alt-right rant about white racism and all that crap, because I'm not interested in that. But as white folks, and particularly Christian white folks, now I'm not Christian, of course, I'm not. I'm either atheist or agnostic. I can't figure out which one I am. Doesn't matter. But everything is fair game if you're criticising white people and Christianity, or if you want to assign some sort of identity to white people. I don't know if we have an identity. That's okay, but ethnic minorities are increasingly protected by society and by the pillars of society. And increasingly, ethnic minorities are getting advantages or are being offered advantages and advancement in a way that white people are not. To right wrong, this is social justice, of course. This is what they define as social justice, right? Positive discrimination and all of that. So I just don't see white people running around towns racially abusing people willy-nilly. I think if it was going on, we would know about it. More than ever, we would know about it. And nobody seems to want to stand up and speak out against this and say, listen, come on, it's not true. We're not this kind of orangutan type, you know, ugly racist society. We're not. We're far from it. And we shouldn't be abandoning a football match and fucking up 99.99% of the watching audience's experience, screwing up their experience, ruining their day out based on an allegation that somebody has been racially abused. Some footballer has heard something from the crowd. You know, people paid £15 or £20. They came along, they paid to park. They got a ticket for their sons and their daughters. They got some food at half time. It's cost them a few bob. And you abandon a football match based on the idea that one or two people have been racist. This is disgraceful. It's insane. Even if there has been one or two people shouting racist things. It's an upside down world. And none of the commentators on Sky News want to point that out. They just want to applaud, because that's the virtue signalling thing to do. Applaud the players and the management for abandoning a football match because somebody said something that was hurty-feely. Somebody hurt somebody's feeling.
And I think
it goes a long way, though, if someone takes a stand, you know, and does that. And I think there was a little bit of, when the England-Bulgaria thing happened, there was a bit of holier than thou from us saying, you know, we would never do this. Actually, Gareth Southgate was so good, was saying, you know, the reason the England players are hardened to this is because they've experienced it playing in England.
Yeah.
And we do have a problem with it. But what I think is, if you're an uneducated moron and you're racist and your team doesn't play football because they're not happy with it, then you realise somewhere the penny drops, this is not on, I've got to stop, you know, it's daft, it's not cool. You know what I mean?
I don't know what is wrong with people,
no.
Frankly, in today's day and age.
There's nothing wrong with people. There's a lot wrong with people, and there's nothing wrong with people, and there's a lot wrong with people. It's nonsense. It's nonsense. I ask black people all the time that I see on social media, people I don't know, to give me some examples of how they've experienced racism of the type described by the people in the studio there on a daily basis or in their lives, and most of them don't get back to me. And the ones that do get back to me, some of them concede, well, yeah, I don't see any of that either. Listen, before we go, I want to say hi to Desmond Knox. Good morning, Desmond. And his son, Cavalli, is listening to the programme. Hi, Cavalli. He's 9, says Desmond. And he likes the swearing, Richie. Swearing is not cool, Cavalli. It's a bit silly. And it is a little bit anti-intellectual, you could say. We do lose the run of ourselves from time to time on programmes like this. But thanks for listening to the programme. Desmond says he likes the show. I don't know. You're raising a very smart kid there. Not because he likes the show, but if he's listening to all that Brexit stuff earlier on, and if he's enjoying that, well, you might have a little mini Jacob Rees-Mogg on your hands, Desmond. So thanks, Cavalli. Nice to speak to you this morning. That's it for the Richie Allen Radio Show. Sunday View is over now. Look after yourselves and one another. Have a brilliant Sunday. Glory, glory, Man United and all of that jazz. I'll see you tomorrow at 9:30 for the newspapers. Until then, bye now.